And I got blasted with minus 19 degrees on the first day. Coming from Arizona as well, no less. So I have this inflammation problem, so I'm going to make some pretty rough noises, but do not worry, it's not contagious. Do not put me in a quarantine camp for COVID-19, please. Yeah, right. We are going to cover some of that stuff today. I'm going to explain a little bit about myself, obviously, and what I'm doing here. So I met my wife, Jillian, who I said is from Minnesota, in 2017. And we fell in love in 3 days, and then got engaged after 2 months, and married after a year. I moved to America. Believe it or not, she was actually willing to move to England. But I decided to move to America, and after starting this work, now I know why. Because at the time, I didn't know why. I always loved America, of course, but I didn't really know why I needed to move. But I had this intuition that I had to move, that I had to come to America. Now I know that it was God bringing me here because I had a mission to do. And we're going to go through that today. So we have two babies and a third on the way. We've had a baby every year since 2020. So I might become a priest to slow things down. We'll see how it goes. So a little bit about me is, I come from a very working class background in England. My mother's from Scotland, my father's Irish. And I grew up in Wales, speaking Welsh, actually. I speak Welsh as a first language. And so my background is very working class. I grew up around a lot of farmers, grew up in rural Wales, around a lot of churches, a very kind of similar culture to what you guys have in this part of America. And so I really understand the need for kind of what we're trying to do here, retaining culture against globalism. But I have studied, actually been studying at Oxford Philosophy of Science. I'm a member of the Oxford Philosophical Society. So what we do in philosophy of science is we study the scientific methods, the processes, right? So if you say, hey, you have a vaccine that apparently is effective, and then a year later it's no longer effective, my job as a philosopher of science would be to say, okay, what method did you use to determine that this is effective? Because there are varying scientific methods, induction, reduction, deduction, and various different types of knowledge as well. So that's kind of what I do. I launched America 21 because in March of 2020, when COVID happened, lockdowns happened, I'd been researching much of this stuff for a decade, global governance, which we're going to talk a lot about tonight. And I saw the playing out of a framework, which I knew because I'd read much of that framework many years prior, and we're going to show in hard, cold proof that the COVID lockdown protocols were written a decade before. So no, this was not response to a virus. I will also point out that in March 2020, I put a data model online. My good friend Human here, he was the one that first heard about it. And you can find out on my social media, which was 3,000 to 4,000% more accurate than the top academics in the world. I had a baby, I was doing this part-time in my bedroom. How did I get it above? Am I the smartest man in the world, or were they purposefully lying? I think it's the latter, as much as I'd like to believe it's the former. So, America 21 was founded to return us to this mission. See, when you often ask people what it makes America the greatest nation on earth, and people, a lot of the guys in the media and a lot of people I've spoken to in politics kind of say, oh, we need this generation's Thomas Paine, because of course Thomas Paine, one of the founding fathers, came over from England in 1775 and wrote the beginnings of the Declaration of Independence on January 10th, 1776. And what Thomas writes about as an Englishman who comes to America and becomes one of the major pillars of this nation's history, he's talking about the fact that if you truly want a nation under God, then you can't have a monarchy, you can't have any type of sovereign government, because God is the sovereign. Our job as men and women is just to ensure that God's law is adhered to. So what makes America the greatest nation on earth is this: a nation under God. Where I originally come from, that isn't the case, right? It's God save the Queen, not a nation under God. And this is really, really critical, and I'll tell you why. Because as we go through some of this information, what you'll find when you argue about COVID, what you'll find when you talk about, just in general, when you talk about these issues, you will find that globalists, what we call leftists, they try to pull you onto their territory. What I mean is, they're going to say, hey, I have the moral high ground, you come onto my turf and argue on my turf. The point of this is to say, no, we don't belong on your turf. I don't believe that you have the moral authority to do the things you do. So that's what a nation under God does. Our objectives are to repeal Agenda 2030 legislatively if we can. And as I go through this, you're going to understand why that's important. We want to end, especially Republican states' anti-constitutional treaties with the United Nations. Now, I'm not pointing any fingers, right? It's just the reality of the situation. And if we can, we can get a Bill of Rights sanctuary state. We have Second Amendment sanctuary states, but we don't actually have a Bill of Rights sanctuary state, and that's what we'll need. I want to start off a little bit with a bit of Greek philosophy. Western civilization is basically founded upon Christian theology and Greek philosophy. I've always kind of thought that we are the mind of Aristotle and the heart of Christ. And the reason that I want to point this out is because when we look at the last couple of years, and I'm sure most of you guys will notice this, those that complied the most with COVID-19 protocols were the ones that said, if we comply enough, it will end. The reason this paradoxical intent is the case is because actually, only when you accept that they're never going to stop, will it actually stop. I mean, this is the paradox, right? So if we collectively say, oh, they are going to keep doubling down and they're going to go on forever, that paradox actually means that it will stop. It's our compliance with it, thinking that it won't stop, means that it actually won't. Does that make sense? Maybe not. Why scripture matters to this fight. So narratives drive civilization. And we have a meta-narrative that the entire civilization was founded on. The gospel founded the English common law system, which founded the Bill of Rights and everything we have since, things like freedom of speech, things like sovereignty. So we have a narrative that basically spans our entire 2,000 years of history. And I think it's really important because there's a lot of churches, there's a lot of Christians out there that, and I see it all of the time, where they will say things like, well, you know, we just have to, Romans 13, right? We just have to accept government, no matter what it is. And I want to just highlight a few things here that shows that we're not supposed to accept anything that is not the highest. So, for example, of course, Christ is the way to truth. Truth is the way to life. 1 John 3:18, he says that we do not love in word, we love in action, right? So this is critical. We love in truth and action. So when people say, hey, loving thy neighbor means you get injected, is that the truth? Because loving thy neighbor means truth and action, as it says in 1 John 3:18. So the reason that this is critical, guys, is because they are essentially redefining what words mean. They're saying, oh, what love really means is just to permit everything. No, love means to will the good of another. Love means truth and action. 1 John 3:18. So these are the kinds of things we have to be really cautious of in this fight. They will take a word, redefine it, and most people won't even notice they've done it. The Holy Spirit of God himself is the Spirit of truth. John 4:17, John 4:23. Truth is the highest principle. You may remember that Jesus said the only unforgivable sin is the blasphemy of the Holy Spirit. Well, the Holy Spirit is the Spirit of truth. So you can kind of see a theme here. The theme is truth. Truth above all. So I want you to pay attention to this as we go through the rest of this work and just in general as we move through this journey. A man must protect his people and his family or is unfaithful. St. Paul said that. I just thought that was a good one. When people say, hey, we don't need a border, we're supposed to love everybody. Well, actually, a man is supposed to protect his nation and his family, or he is unfaithful to God. So, I'm going to get into the Agenda 21, Agenda 2030 stuff in more detail in the second half. What I'm going to do in this next, I suppose, half an hour or so, is give you a conceptual overview on how this relates to scripture and how, again, how narratives drive civilization. And also how, as it says in the Bible, nothing new under the sun. So the Great Reset is a think tank ideology to transition to the fourth industrial revolution. So the Great Reset is an ideology. It is not a political system. When Klaus Schwab came out, chairman of the World Economic Forum, in June 2020 and said, we need to avoid a Great Depression through a Great Reset. What he's basically saying is, we have the methods, we know what we need to do to reset the economic system. But it is not a political system. The political system comes under Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030, which we're going to get into in some detail today. So the actual political implementation of global governance, which is a legit thing, as I'm going to show you, is through Agenda 21, the agenda for the 21st century. Most of those milestones will be achieved by 2030. That's what Agenda 2030 is. So we have ideology, we have 21st century implementation, and we have the major milestone of when they're supposed to be achieved. And this is why you'll see similar themes like corporate stakeholders in Agenda 2030 and stakeholder capitalism in the Great Reset. It's the same thing. I'm going to explain more about what these are. The justification for all of these is to save the world from climate change. Excuse me, yeah, right. So global governance. Notice it is not government, but governance. This is because governance can be unelected, right? You don't have to have elected representatives for governance. Governance could be banks, governance could be corporations, governance could even be an algorithm. So what we're looking at is not global government, but global governance. And this is actually something really important for us too, because many of us, conservative leaning, right, libertarian, Christian, have always been skeptical of government, which is understandable, and we should always be so. But the very important thing to understand about the governance is they plan on usurping government. That's the point, and we're going to show how that is done. They get around the nation state by using governance, not government. So actually, government is critical, just has to be good government. So it is important, of course, to understand that the Great Reset, Agenda 2030, is the antithesis of anything that we love and cherish. Sustainable development is the most important thing that you need to understand about politics that's going on in your lifetime. Sounds hyperbolic, and I will explain why. All of everything that, say, Trump talked about globalism a lot, right? We've all known, but sustainable development is the foundation of which all of it is implemented. Red alert every time you see that word. Let me explain why. Sustainable development means the control of the means of production and consumption. Sustainable development basically says that over the course of the next decade, as we get increasingly more totalitarian, we need to meter your water, we need to meter your food intake, we need to control your agriculture, we need to control your economy, we need to control your movement, we need to shut down your power plants, we need to stop you driving, because we need to save the earth from climate change. That's the power of sustainable development. What this essentially does is allows them to centralize and control all production and consumption. They take it a step further than the Soviets. They even want to meter consumption, not just production. Let me give you a perfect example. Page 350 of the United Nations Global Biodiversity Assessment Report states, all livestock has to be centralized, has to be sustainable, right? So cows, sheep, goats, horse, etc. is not sustainable. But there goes farmland, there goes organic food, and necessary protein for healthy humans. The biodiversity presented to world leaders being implemented in America now is a transformation into centralized control of food production. But it also includes property, housing, land, healthcare, everything. And this is all in the United Nations treaties and assessment reports themselves. So Henry Kissinger said, he who controls the food controls the people. Technocracy. What we're witnessing today is not communism. It looks a lot like it, but it actually isn't. It is the system of technocracy. Technocracy is communism and fascism combined, because fascism is the merging together of the political and the private. That's all fascism means. Fascism basically means there's no separation. The state and the private have become one entity. And of course, communism means that the state controls the entity. Well, technocracy is both, but it is far more sophisticated. Far more sophisticated, because it is the science of social engineering, When we get into the COVID stuff in a second, you'll explain, you'll see why it's very sophisticated. It's a means of governance that was actually birthed around 100 years ago in Columbia University, which is the number 6 university in the world, right? Funny enough, they're the ones who have also put out a lot of the truth about the injection, so we'll get to that as well. So basically, in technocracy, science, economics, education, everything is centralized. And because we're in a time of technology, that's going to be very, very easy to do. You can do that on an app now. And say you're a dissident, right? Say you don't like what they're doing. Well, they can cut you off the app, and then you have no access to bank accounts. You have no access to paying bills for your energy, so your lights go out. Your water gets shut off. You can't get fuel. Does this sound crazy? It's happening in China already. This system is China already. In fact, the European Union is halfway there. That's why the United Kingdom left the European Union. So, a lot of people say to me, Mark, this is, end times. There's no point in doing anything about it. I very much disagree, because as we looked at, Christ told us to do things. Told us that love is truth in action. And when you meet Christ, do you want to be the guy that said, I just didn't really feel like doing anything? No. No, we want to be the people that did everything we could, even if there's nothing we can do. But I don't believe that at all. I believe what we're looking at is actually the Tower of Babel. And I'm going to show you why. It does, of course, say in the Bible that there's nothing new under the sun. And I did explain that narratives drive civilization. That's why if you come from a Buddhist or an Islamic civilization, that narrative, of course, is very different to the one that we have. And that changes the way that people operate, right? The norms, the social norms that people have. Well, Tower of Babel is like one of our oldest ones. And you may remember that Babel followed the flood, right? The great catastrophe. Isn't it interesting that centralized systems that try to reach God always happen after catastrophe? Almost like a reset after a lockdown and the global economy being plunged. Let me explain more. Tower of Babel is actually Agenda 21, 2030, the reset. Tower of Babel is global governance. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. Come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. As if one people speak in the same language, they've begun to do this, and it will be impossible for them. So here's a very important thing. One system, one people, right? Global governance. No nations, no individuality, no sovereignty. Tower of Babel for the 21st century. And of course, we know what God's intentions are. He scattered them all over the earth, so they had nations. It's pretty clear throughout the Bible that God wants nations and sovereign people. So, catastrophe is necessary for rebuilding society, right? And this is because trauma creates a susceptibility. In March 2020, what essentially happens is, so let me give you a brief example of this. You had your whole life mapped out, and now suddenly everything looks pretty apocalyptic. Everything's shutting down, the economy is tanking, Great Depression levels of things. You think you might die, you think people you love might die. That is what we call trauma. Trauma creates a situation in your brain that your brain is malleable. You're infantilized, you're susceptible to new conditions of behavior. This is why technocracy is so sophisticated, because they understand that in March 2020, why you looked around at people and you said, wow, everyone's changed so much. Like, everyone's 6 feet apart, wearing masks, using QR codes for their rights. Well, it's because they're in a state of trauma. And that's the thing about catastrophe, whether it's a major flood, whether it is lockdowns and economic devastation. Following that catastrophe, you are now in a state where you can be reconditioned into a new type of man. And we've seen this in many times throughout history. This version is a very big one. When populations move from a world of order into a world of disorder, basically, they look for the parent figure, they look for somebody to solve the problem. Enter Anthony Fauci, right? Enter Bill Gates, enter Klaus Schwab. So this is why it's really, really important to understand this stuff. This is the pattern that happens every time, everywhere. So why is this parallel so pertinent today? Well, we've kind of been through this, right? One world, one system, hyper-connected, no sovereignty model of governance. Again, not government. The same excessive pride that drove this tower is the same excessive pride that we see today driving this agenda. It is the idea that man can be ever-present, can be God, right? It's the idea that I, as a man, can make everyone in the world the same, because I have that power. I have the power to make Americans just like Indians and just like French. Forget about the fact that people have evolved over time, have their own customs, have their own beliefs. And this is really, really critical, because this is how these people think, as we're going to get into. I'm going to prove it to you. Nothing of what I'm talking about today in terms of this agenda is conjecture. This is all my opinion, of course, but I'm going to show you plenty of proof. So in this case, as the tower reaches into the heavens, what we're really looking at today is this technocracy. The heavens is 24/7 connection on your phone, 24/7 tracking, right? Being able to edit genes through injections. This is the tower. It doesn't have to be a literal tower, right? Although the European Union has a literal tower. The symbolism is right there. That's the EU Parliament. Right? And of course, the United Kingdom left the EU because the European Union was a 28 nation, now a 27 nation, superstate. One currency, no borders, no sovereignty, right? All managed by this Tower of Babel right there. So sustainable development in these places is much, much, much further ahead than it is with us. So we have a better shot, but we still don't have long. And the reality is the EU is not even where they want to go. Ultimately, it will be China. But you know, like I said, the EU has a central currency, one passport, etc. So Babel is technocracy. Here's your smart city. Here's what's going to be coming, by the way, as we'll get into in a bit. Everything will be run in the smart city through a central point, through a central algorithm. Think of it like, for now, think about that you have one program or one app. And that one app manages energy, agriculture, health, data, government, manufacturing, etc. That's what the smart city basically means. This is your Babel, right? This is them thinking they can control every facet of your life, that they can be God, they can reach God in the sky. So this is really important, by the way, because again, this is how parts of China already work. They have this social credit system already, where if people don't pick up their dog poop, they get denied these services from that central program, from that central app. That already exists. It already happens. So this smart city is kind of where we're going. Anyone ever heard of David Rockefeller? Yeah. Yeah, he's quite a character. So he's one of the major pillars of this whole thing. And let's look at his own words. Because often, so I was in the radio with Aaron Flint this morning. Somebody calls in, they're like, "Hey, you're giving so much misinformation." I'm like, okay. And then you point them to their own work and you say, hey, David Rockefeller here, chairman of Chase Bank, one of the founding creators of the United Nations, the World Health Organization, the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Trilateral Commission. It's quite a lot of influence. Here's what he thinks about America's sovereignty. For more than a century, ideological extremists at either end of the political spectrum have attacked the Rockefeller family for the inordinate influence they claim we wield over American political and economic institutions. Some even believe we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists, and conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political system. One world, if you will. If that's the charge, I stand guilty. And I am proud of it. The supranational sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national autodetermination we've seen in past centuries. Now, that actually, by the way, just that last part's a bit of a I actually have these books. The last part about the intellectual banking elites, creatively reworded. But everything else here is 100% true. He says he's proud of creating this global governance system in his own memoirs. So the reason in March 2020, I and a few others saw the unfolding of much of this system is because they have been putting it in their work for decades. Here we go, Rockefeller Foundation, Operation Lockstep, 2010. Let's have a look. Let's have an insight into how very far ahead of time they integrate plans and then they unfold. Here's your Rockefeller Lockstep scenario, 2010. A deadly new zoonotic viral strain kills 20% of the global population, mainly healthy young adults. COVID-19 pandemic 2020. Zoonotic virus strikes globe. Scientists predict millions of deaths. Deadly effects on economic industry, tourism, supply chains, etc. They say the same thing. Western countries' deadly leniency is blamed for containment failure. US and President Donald Trump blamed for containment failure. China's quick imposition of mandatory quarantines and emetic sealing saves millions of lives. This was written in 2010. Of course, we saw that with COVID-19. Hey, China's the model, let's lock down, right? Seal the borders. World leaders flex the muscles. Yeah, we've seen all that. So social distancing was pointed out as well. The point is this Operation Lockstep document details out essentially what they rolled out in March of 2020. It was written in 2010, commissioned by the Rockefeller Foundation. So this exercise was conducted in association with a group called the Global Business Network, a now defunct group of very sophisticated and connected Silicon Valley influence peddlers, described by Wikipedia as a global strategy firm. So basically what this shows, and by the way, this is cited from Principia Scientific, which is a very well-established independent UK scientific body. So that's where this information comes from. Very credible teams of scientists. The point is that a world of tighter top-down government control and more authoritarian leadership was always the point. That's why this was created in 2010. And these, like I said, these are scientists that are pointing this out. How about this one? The United States' initial policy of strongly discouraging citizens from flying proved deadly in its leniency, accelerating the spread of the virus, not just within the US, but across borders. However, a few countries did fare better, China in particular. The Chinese government's quick imposition and enforcement of mandatory quarantine of all citizens, as well as this incident near hermetic sealing. We've gone through that, right? China has always been the sustainable development technocratic blueprint for the West. Believe it or not, China was, and we'll probably get into a bit of this later, but China was actually set up by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski, provably. All traced. China was set up as the petri dish for the system. That's why in 2010 they knew exactly what China were going to do. This was written in 2010, and it's exactly how it played out. They blamed the US, they blamed Trump, and they said the Chinese government did amazing 10 years earlier. That's because they want us to take this smart city, this technocracy system that China have. It's the perfect system, and it's one they created. The pandemic represents a rare but narrow window of opportunity to reflect, reimagine, and reset our world. I can take it you guys have heard of Klaus Schwab. I don't know if he'd be very welcome in these parts, but so I don't feel like he's a man of God. Do you get that vibe? So this is the point, right? They're constantly shouting this, constantly telling you what they're doing. Global governance is a conspiracy theory, I get told all the time, which is, doesn't matter, by the way. Using an ad hominem, using a label, like conspiracy theory, doesn't make something untrue, right? That is a logical fallacy. It means it's impossible to be true. What you're doing is you're throwing a label and saying, if I throw a label, we won't actually have to look at the subject that's being discussed. You can only prove a subject true or untrue by focusing on the subject, not the person and not labels. So I get said, and people say all the time, global governance, conspiracy theory. This is World Economic Forum, Strategic Intelligence, University of Oxford, global governance, right there. In the middle, with every other network around it. Anti-globalism, how they want to, these are the things that they want to fight. They want to weaponize interdependence. They want nations to be more dependent upon each other. Why? Well, because a sovereign nation that's independent, of course, you can't control. Right? That's why they want interdependence. That's why they want us to get our stuff from China. Because if we produce all our own stuff, we can't be controlled. Anti-globalism, power shifts and conflict, institutional complexity. So you can see, right there, the Davos, all the most powerful, richest people in the world, that global governance is a legitimate framework right there. I want to show you a little bit of how this kind of plays out. Co-curators, Harvard, Oxford, Yale. Wait until the Oxford Philosophical Society see this presentation. I will be booted out. But you can see all these organizations. So what they say in the World Economic Forum website, and we're going to get into this a bit later, we ensure that public-private partnerships benefit from the insight, right? So what they're basically saying, this is your public and private merging. This is your fascism. These universities, with those funding the World Economic Forum, are dictating policy. Bear in mind, lockdowns was their idea, right? So you had them who funded these universities, and then they gave us the data model. This is why it's really important as conservatives you don't just blame the government. This actually was not the government. The government were the ones that just followed their orders. So it's really important. And another thing is that they will try to purposefully make us hate our own government. Why? Because they want to replace it. And we're going to get into that as well. Zbigniew Brzezinski, National Security Advisor for Jimmy Carter. He was... Oh, are we still on? Are we good? Good. He was the Foreign Advisor for Barack Obama. Excuse me. And prominent member of the Trilateral Commission. Here's what Zbigniew Brzezinski said. The nation state as a fundamental unit of man's organized life has ceased to be the principal creative force. International banks and multinational corporations are acting and planning in terms that are in advance of the political concepts of the nation state. Perhaps in a more forward way, the technotronic era, involves the gradual appearance of a more controlled society. Such a society would be dominated by an elite unrestrained by traditional values. This is why they're constantly attacking tradition. This is why they're constantly attacking like men and women being the norm for kids, which of course doesn't take a genius to work out. How else do you produce children? But it's all about undermining and subversion. So you destroy the tradition, you destroy people's attachment to their own system, to their own land, to their own people. So that's why he said this in 1970, before he was National Security Advisor, before he was Barack Obama's Foreign Advisor. That's why I'm showing you all these things are decades before the things actually happen. So as he was saying here, soon it will be possible to assert almost continuous surveillance of every citizen, maintain up-to-date complete files containing the most personal information about people. He's basically saying, back in 1970, they knew that this time we are now in was going to come because they were the ones putting it in that direction. So climate elitists' own words that precede Agenda 21, as I say, we're going to get into what Agenda 21, 2030 actually are. But what I'm trying to do right now is give you all the background to show you how we even got to Agenda 21 in 1992 to begin with. Club of Rome was founded in 1968. They published a report in 1972 warning about environmental disaster by the year 2000. None of it happened. But then, of course, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez will say, oh, it's not 2000, it's 2030. Co-founder Aurelio Peche, I think, later stated the data model was curated to get this outcome, see March 2020. So they said many, many years later, they put in crap and you get crap out. That's how a data model works. I know I've done many because it moved towards global governance. Excerpt from his 1991 publication, The First Global Revolution. In searching for a new enemy to unite us, we decided that global warming would fit the bill. The real enemy then is humanity itself. And this is actually critical when you understand it spiritually. The point is, carbon dioxide you produce. and you are made of carbon. So when they say carbon neutral, I'd be very skeptical what that really means. Fourth World Wilderness Conference. The World Environment Movement will soon be in the hands of the World Order people, where there is no more first, second, and third world, just a boundaryless fourth world. Well, the Great Reset, this was written in 1992, by the way, the Great Reset is that. It's to say that we're resetting the economic system, and there will be no middle class, because that's not sustainable, dude. All right? It's sustainable for us to have all the money, though, just not for you guys. So you have an insider highlight the problem and one highlighting the intended solution. Quick facts. Is the world really in danger from climate disaster? Aside from zero of the disasters ever actually happening, here's a couple of quick facts that I think will be useful. Carbon dioxide currently makes up 0.117% of the atmosphere. Over 90% of it is water vapor. At 400 parts per million, it is lower than the 2,000 parts per million, which would be optimal, and lower than the 4,000 parts per million it has been at other times of history. We are 10 times lower, probably, than the Industrial Revolution. Water is a more powerful greenhouse gas, 20 times higher than carbon dioxide, said somebody, Professor Leslie Woodcock. And agriculture, of course, this is critical, especially in this part of the country, but it's very critical for freedom. High cholesterol is almost exclusively meat and dairy. The brain is 60% fats. Effective cognitive function requires cholesterol. Not like they would want brain-dead globalists, is it? What about COVID-19, then? 0.115% mortality rate, so akin to the flu, of course, including risk groups, and that is from John Ioannidis, Stanford University. 95% of COVID deaths had 2 to 3 COVID morbidities, and 75%, of course, had 4. Right? And this is actually what I said in March 2020, how I got the numbers actually right. PCR tests have a 22% false positive rate. So that means at least 1 in 5, not 1 in 4 people who have had the test actually never had it at all. 187,000 COVID injected deaths in 6 months from February to August 2021. Columbia University, number six in the world, actually the home of technocracy. Unfortunately, they released a report and said that in 6 months in 2021, we lost nearly 200,000 people to the COVID-19 vaccine. That's in 6 months at 1 to 2 doses, not in a year at 2 to 3, just for the record. Why I wanted to say this is because this is all critical to everything else, right? The COVID thing has been the gateway, the thing that they have opened up this project with publicly. And most people have never heard any of these figures. We need to know this stuff because everyone you come up against for climate change is going to try to hammer these points, and the same with COVID-19. Climate change is the bigger one. They're going to drop COVID-19 eventually, probably in a year or so. The climate change is always going to be the primary narrative. And you might wonder, well, how are they going to get that to be as powerful as COVID? Wait until the climate change power outages start. If you think lockdowns were bad, wait until there's a blackout because of the weather. Which is going to happen. I actually said it was going to happen months ago, and it's already happened in 3 states in America. And in fact, even in the United Kingdom, they're saying that they're going to have to shut the power off a few days a week because of climate change. And I said this back in October or November on my website. They're so predictable. It's a framework. Or I'm psychic or prophet. So, excuse me. Why white people? Why America? Why Christianity? When we look at this sort of anti-white, anti-Christian stuff, and you can apply this to any group, right? If you go back in time, it would be anti-other groups. Why is it in this specific time that we see so much anti-white stuff? Well, if we take the premise that global governance is the target goal, then to achieve the goal, you would hyper-focus on those that are a majority population. If Americans were not white people majority, they would be focusing on somebody else. The reality is, it is effective war strategy to demoralize your opposition. As Sun Tzu actually said, the best thing to do is to demoralize them and you don't have to fight them. If you make them hate themselves, make them hate their God, they're easy to take over, which is where we are now, where we have been. Global governance is the premise. You've seen plenty of evidence for that just now, and that's, I promise you, it's not even scratching the surface. I have hundreds of books, far deeper than any of the things I just showed. So global governance is the premise, all provable. We just went through it. Western civilization falls if America does. And if Western civilization falls, the world then is consolidated into global governance. That is why they're constantly hammering Christians, etc., American men. They're trying to demoralize and weaken anyone that is going to be a primary opposition. And often people will say to me, they go, but other people are opposition too. And it's like, yeah, of course, but don't think about it with feelings. Think about it as probability, as raw numbers. If you have 5 million men in one group and you have 50 million men in the other group, of course you're going to focus on the one that's 10 times more. That's how you win a war. Right? And this is kind of part of the issue that we have, is so many people go into feelings and not thinking about it as strategy. These people have mapped this out for a very long time. They don't care about people's offense. They don't care. They want everything you have. They just stole half the world's wealth in the last 2 years. So, what Agenda 21 means for American families? Smart economy. No access to buying property or even a mortgage. Key industries, agriculture, automotive, manufacturing, will be decimated, completely gone, because of course it produces carbon dioxide. Universal basic income will be provided. And by the way, 27 to 30% of Americans have been on government assistance the last 2 years. So we're kind of a third of the way there. That's how everything interlinks. Smart environment, water and agriculture production and consumption will be monitored. Flushing of the toilet, how many times you've showered. Natural resources will be owned by corporate stakeholders, NGO, and the state, i.e. the Prairie Reserve. Right? And that's a great example. Movement on land, even within states, will be restricted. And you might go, well, that's crazy. Is it? You just did it for 2 years. You know, people, like, when I tell people this stuff, they go, oh, man, that's insane. I'm like, have you been asleep for the last 2 years? You were restricted the whole time. You know, people go, because I'm going to show you, they don't want you to leave your area. And people go, that's crazy. Really? That was your 2020. They've already done most of the stuff I'm outlining here. This is the scary thing. We get so acclimatized to a totalitarianism that we don't even realize how bad it has gotten. Smart society, no say in education, and they will be taught the most horrendous forms of global liberalism. No access to healthcare unless you meet all their criteria, i.e. vaccine passports, and eventually sustainability credit score. Like I said, the vaccine passport, the COVID thing, was just a battering ram, right? You break down the door, but it was never the thing that was supposed to come in. That's why they are going to go back to climate change. And they are going to use power outages, blackouts, and economics to do so. And eventually, I don't say it's going to be tomorrow, maybe 2025, which is why we have to get moving on this. They want a sustainability credit score. So that basically means, and this is what they have in China, and they're piloting actually in parts of Europe as well. Basically what this sustainability credit score means is that, like an actual credit score, but it's not based on your debt or your economics, it's based on how sustainable your life is. Right? So did you use too many flights? Did you use the right company? Did you buy the right thing? And if your score goes down, you can't rent an apartment, you can't buy a car, you can't leave the country. And if you think, well, again, like that's crazy, you would have thought the last 2 years was crazy in 2019, but here we are. I mean, if they can make you not leave, my sister wanted to come, none of my family have been able to visit my children because none of them have the vaccine. They can't get into the country without getting 2 gene therapy injections for a 0.1% fatality rate. So my babies have never met any of their family on my side. Their Scottish grandmother, who's insane. That's my mother. All right, I'm going to come over and bring some whiskey. But the point that I'm making is if they can stop you coming in for a vaccine, there's really nothing to say sustainability wouldn't work just as well. It works better. Because think about the last couple of years. If they were bad when they thought they were saving their grandmother, what are they going to be like when they think they're saving the world? All 2030 legislation is carbon neutral, including the stuff that has been implemented in Missoula, Montana. How will this look in reality? Well, just think about carbon neutral. What does carbon neutral actually mean? Well, what uses carbon? Per the United Nations Biodiversity Assessment Report, manufacturing of all kinds, agriculture, construction, automotive, truck driving, taxis and buses, airlines, oil and fuel, transportation, firearms, and about 30% of America's energy. 5 minutes? 5 minutes. So, by the way, by 2030, in parts of this state and much of the world and much of the country, this has already been signed into law. That's why I'm doing this. I'm going to show you how in the second half. This isn't something that's coming down. This has already been put into a memorandum in the city council. Not here. In Missoula, but San Francisco, Los Angeles, Austin, New York, every major city in the country and in the world. So by 2030, carbon neutral means all of this is cut. If you thought the lockdowns were devastating, wait until this happens. This will be apocalyptic. What the Great Reset will actually look like: smart grid, sustainability system, we taught this, automated intelligence, central bank digital currencies. They're going to move away from the dollar. You're going to use a digital dollar. Of course, that means if you're not living sustainably, you're saying things they don't like, they can just stop you from being able to purchase. No cars, no flights, limited access to land, no property. You may remember Klaus Schwab saying, by 2030, you'll own nothing and be happy. He meant it. Travel will be a luxury, meat will be a luxury, and we will have city-states, not regions, not nations. So you can imagine that Los Angeles will actually be more like Singapore of the United Nations. What Agenda 21 means for America's constitutional republic? It basically means, we haven't got long left, so I'm gonna go through this quick. Basically means that the premise of our nation now, of our culture now, is not the Bill of Rights or a nation under God, but sustainable development. That's basically what it means. It means that if something is not sustainable, that is supreme. Sustainable development has the legal supremacy over the Constitution. That's basically what it means. So, of course, it means that Amendments 4, Privacy Amendments 5, Property, etc., they're all gone. So the divine masculine needs to come back. I guess I'll end on this one. Women have actually done more than men in this fight, from my experience, to be honest with you, in the last couple of years. I've seen women step up more, but we cannot get over the finish line without men. We can't. And I see a lot of people, I understand why, right? But I see a lot of people, there's this Christianity which is, I hate to say it, but overly feminized, right? And, you know, they'll say, hey man, you're just supposed to forgive and forgive and forgive. I'm like, no, none of that's true at all. But I want to highlight a few things. The divine masculine is we are missing the other half of the gospel. We are missing the other half of scripture. And it really needs to come back. Otherwise, we won't make it through this fight. The good news is, here it is. I'm going to give you some examples. From the Psalms, defend the poor and the fatherless, do justice to the afflicted and needy, deliver them, rid them out of the hand of the wicked. Learn to do good, seek justice, rebuke the oppressor. Jesus, of course, made a scourge and took the Pharisees out. For he is God's servant for your good. He does not bear the sword in vain. These are just some examples, but there's actually plenty. My favorite one is Luke 10:19, where Jesus says, I give you the authority to trample on serpents and scorpions and over the power of the enemy. But don't do it because I've given you the authority. Don't rejoice in that. Rejoice in the fact that your name is written in heaven. What he's saying is we should never take pleasure, which we shouldn't, in trampling on darkness, but we should still do it. Just do it in the name of love, in goodness. And I guess, guys, that's us for the first half. Thank you very much. I guess we're returning about 10 minutes.